He is forced retrieval for modern trade by Ferdinand Schlatt and Antonio Maria.
Thank you. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining. So today we are going to talk a bit about how to do query processing for learned sparse models in a more efficient way than what you have seen so far. My name is Antonio Ferdinand. We work together at CELTS. Those are our contacts. You know, feel free to reach out. Maybe like a few words about CELTS. CELTS is a startup that is working on enabling essentially AI workflows and LLMs and chatbots and foundational models in general to access the web as a tool. So pretty much web knowledge through an API for you know, any application that needs to run independently, autonomously, and reliably, most importantly. So I'm going to pass the mic to Ferdi now.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Hi from me as well. I'm going to give a quick context, just a quick introduction, I guess, about what search is. I'm sure most of you are all familiar. And Maxime gave a nice quick introduction as well. But this might be relevant just to understand a bit of the intricacies of what Antonio will be talking about later. So in which context are we? We're talking about ad hoc search. So we have some kind of big document collection. For example, in this case, a bunch of documents talking about different open search frameworks, and maybe one random document about geckos and whatever. A bunch of different other documents in this collection. We pass this to some processor that'll give us some impact scores or whatever that we can then pass on to an index, and then have some query that comes in. And hopefully this index then gives us, in this case, maybe the top three documents, and it should hopefully filter out for our query open source search framework. It should detect that these three documents up here are the ones that are somewhat relevant, and the one about geckos probably is not. And so initially, or what we're going to look at in this case is quickly this what I call here a processor. Originally, and that's what Maxime already had a quick example for, is usually we'd use some kind of lexical term-based frequencies, whatever. So for example, we have here just one processor that takes in the documents. And in this example, perhaps the first document contains leucine, the term leucine, or the word leucine 10 times. And that's just what we count. We have some term frequencies. Maybe is in this document 15 times, a bunch of times as well. And this is what we do per document. We could do some more complex stuff, normalize them, things like that. But just for the sake of this example, we're using term statistics to evaluate how important, what the impact of one of these terms in our document is. And what we then do in our index is we convert this into an inverted index. We just use the terms as the posting, and then have a postings list where for every single term, we count which document contained this term, and then have our impact score inside there. So in this case, maybe the term frequency, we had leucine 10 times. Some other document in our collection, document 17, has it 2 times. But now, in this case, the list is sorted, so any document in between doesn't actually contain this term. And we can use this to quickly search through our corpus by we get a new query. Maybe we only need to look at the posting lists that contain these queries. That's how search, per se, works very quickly. Nice thing about this, term statistics at least, it's very, very fast. We can use Tokenizer, for example, to tokenize documents very, very fast. We can index stuff very fast, and it's very fast in retrieval. There's been years of optimizations and research to make this really, really quick. And it's actually fairly effective. I mean, BM25 is still being used today, and it's fairly hard to beat still. Like, even the big neural models are somewhat better on some few tasks, but in the end, these term statistics are very effective. Some of the downsides, which we'll talk about in a second, what neural models maybe do give us is, in this case, we only have lexical matches. We don't have any semantic matching. We only have or can only find the documents that actually contain the terms that we're searching for. We could do some complex document expansion and this and that, but in the sense, in this case right here, we only have lexical matches we can actually work with. And the final negative maybe is these are a heuristic. We have a few parameters in BM25. We have 2 parameters where we might be able to change the scores a bit. But in general, we have some heuristic that we're using to assess the impact of a score. It's not learned. And what we've seen in the past few years, using models to learn scores maybe a bit better. So what happened, BM25 back, almost or more than 20 years ago now, pretty much, a couple of things were developed in between, but since BERT was created, a bunch of different learned sparse models were created, it's a whole zoo and different types of variations and things like that. But in the end, they all kind of do a very similar thing or try to achieve similar things, and I'll try to summarize that in this quick slide, where for the sake of this example, let's just look at the first document here, and we'll do our processor is now doing some magic, in some neural magic in the background, and instead of having term statistics, what we're doing is we're training the model to compute impact scores for the terms in our document. So this 13.5, for example, is just some score that the model learned. This is the relevance or the impact of this term in our document. And it's able to learn, for example, that is and a and stop words or words that don't encode semantics, they might not have high impact scores because they don't encode a lot of information that might be relevant. And the last part is they may actually be able to add semantically similar terms that aren't actually in the document. They can add terms to be able to find documents that don't actually contain terms, avoiding this lexical mismatch problem. So these are two advantages that these neural models give us. On the one hand, learnable impact scores. On the other hand, semantic term expansion. The downside is it's very, very slow and expensive. Building a web-scale index or something with these types of models, very, very expensive. And the other question is, how fast is this? Can we reuse the index structures, the optimizations that people have built over the last 25, 30 years? Can we actually reuse these index structures using these impact scores that kind of look similar to term statistics? Does that work? Let's look at this. This was a paper from 2021 from Joel McKenzie and a bunch of colleagues. And they looked at this question, and they looked at this from the perspective, okay, what are the distributions, like the distributions of the different vectors for different types of models? So if we look at BM25, the unique terms, and this is for the MS Markov passage corpus, there's 2.6, 2.7 million unique terms that were created in the index if you use BM25, around 30 terms per document, 5 terms per query, and you have very, very fast search through using this, for example, the PISA engine. And then they tried different types of models encoding this corpus to see how the statistics change and how the latency changes. And for example, Deep Impact, one type of model, it has a lot larger vocabulary. It adds or has a lot more unique terms. It has a lot more terms per document and a bit fewer terms per query. Unicoil, on the contrast, has a very, very small vocabulary compared to BM25. It's constrained to the vocabulary of the subword token vocabulary of the baseline model. And it, again, has a lot more terms per document and a few more terms per query. And another model, Splayed, same as Unicoil, constrained to the vocabulary of the base model, and it adds a lot of terms to the document and to the query. And this reflects itself in the latency of using just a plain inverted index, the PISA engine. It is a lot slower. Using these impact weights actually makes things way, way slower, even though we are a bit more effective. But how can we maybe get to a stage where we're still as fast as using the term impact scores and get the efficiency in retrieval using these learned impact scores? And the conclusion, no, we can't reuse these engines that were developed because the optimizations that were developed for these term frequency distributions just don't work very well for these neural sparse models. So what maybe two strategies we can work on, and this is the last part for me before Antonio takes it away, I want to give a bit of context what kind of stuff we can do. And there's two different strategies we could follow. On the one hand, the one is early exiting, where we just don't score everything. We try to see, okay, try to only compute the scores for the documents that maybe we actually need to compute the scores for. And one way to do that is, for example, here on this left side, for every single document, we have a very quick way to estimate an upper bound score. This is the score that the document could achieve for a certain query, and we do this very, very quickly. And then if we want to, for example, in this case, get the top 3 documents, we can score the documents one by one. The first one, we have an actual score of 9.5, for example. The second one, a bit lower than the actual score as well, and stuff like that. Now we have the top three scores, and then we know the fourth and fifth document, their maximum potential score is lower than the current minimum score of our top three documents are. So we don't actually need to score these. We can just skip scoring them and save a lot of computation in that way. So we don't actually score these and be done with that. Or the other strategy is we score everything, but approximately. We use some faster scoring mechanism to score everything, but not as accurately. And this is, has a couple of advantages. For example, you're very, very fast. So in this case, these are the actual scores. And we might approximate these scores and compute them way, way quicker. The problem here is we don't have exact scoring anymore. For example, in this case, we have one document that has a score. The exact score should be 4.8. This one should be 6.2. But our approximate scores actually switch the order of the documents. So you're not actually sure you're getting the exact top K. So we have a trade-off here. But we'll probably get a lot quicker. So these two strategies we can follow. Or in general, that's how I would frame it, where the potential we can save. And that's where Antonio jumps in and talks about BMP.
Yep. So following the two approaches that Ferdi just described, we thought about sort of like coming up with a completely different approach that is not actually based on inverted indexes, or at least not the way we are used to. Well, first of all, we left the mental model of having every document going to be indexed into an inverted index into passing lists. And we started thinking about vectors, which is a very common pattern in dense retrieval, to have dense vectors such as a concatenation of like floating point values. But those are different. Those are different because those are like sparse vectors. What does that mean? It means that for not all the positions in these vectors are actually positive values or are actually non-zero values. For a sparse model, for a lexical model, a sparse vector is basically indicating which tokens out of the original lexicon or the original vocabulary, so all the unique terms that you see in the corpus, terms are actually present. So as you can see, for example, I love New York contains only three terms, and only three positions in the sparse vector that corresponds are actually set with a value. And those values are actually generated using a sparse model, in this case, a learned sparse model in this specific case. So now, instead of having passing lists, we have vectors. And we thought a bit about how can we make this more similar to the standard vector retrieval process that we see in vector databases. And the idea is to basically have the collection of documents as vectors represented as a concatenation of these vectors, but like also split into basically blocks. As you can see here, we have like three blocks. Each block contains three vectors. So now, when you receive a query, you also produce a sparse vector. You convert it into a sparse vector by setting the position of the query terms for which that is contained in the original query text. And you could potentially like compute the score for every document in the collection by doing a dot product, a simple dot product between the query vector and the document vector. Now, if you do that, you're not saving any time because you're essentially scanning the entire collection, the entire representation. So the idea was, okay, let's actually create some upper bounds, so some scores that will tell us if we actually need to enter the block and score exhaustively the entire block or not. So we added essentially an additional indirection, an additional data structure of vector of maxes, which are essentially the max for every position in the block contained. So for every position, we look at the max score for all the, in this case, three vectors for that block, and we represent it as a single vector of max scores. Now, if your block is big enough, let's say contains eight vectors, 16, 32, 64, and so on, you're basically reducing the number of vectors for which you have to compute the dot product by a factor of the block size. literally making query processing X times faster with respect to what the block size is. And so now running dot product against the vector of maxes, well, first it's a very fast operation because it's on fewer vectors. And at the same time, it gives you like an upper bound, so a good estimation of what's going to be inside each block. You end up having this essentially priority lists. And you can use this priority list to basically jump around between blocks and say, yeah, I'm going to score this, but I'm not going to score the other one, which goes back to the early termination approach that Ferdy was mentioning. In order to do that and decide what you're not going to score, you maintain like a top k heap, which is, you know, a data structure that keeps essentially the top k elements most valuable for your retrieval, highest in score, and you always compare with the lowest, least important element. So usually the one that has the smallest score. To make things simple and faster, we also introduce quantization. So instead of having a sparse vector of floating point values, we decided to use 8 bits for every element. So the standard linear quantization, which makes things much faster because you can then vectorize most of the operations. And this was also useful for another reason that I'm going to introduce very soon, which is sorting. Now, we mentioned we have a list of, like a priority list, so a list of upper bounds, scores, upper bound scores that will tell you like which is the most promising block to access first. You want to access in decreasing order, so you literally want to sort these scores. The problem is that, you know, if you're operating at the million scale, even sorting millions of values can be very expensive and slow. So the standard traditional sorting, even done in place and so on, it's like still too slow. So we thought about like using a bucket sort. And this was possible for one reason. You have a predefined set of buckets. I mean, in this example, it's 256, a predefined set of buckets. If you quantize to 8 bits and you know that you're going to summing up to a max of number of terms, you know that, you know, this array of buckets can basically increase to a power of 2 to the 16 or something manageable, essentially. The way it works, it's actually very simple. So you iterate the upper bounds, and you place them in the position corresponding to a score, to the score. Those are essentially you know, quantized score. So you know exactly which is the array index that you have to access. And each array is literally like a list of elements. So you can append at the end. Now, the returning these bucket IDs in order, it basically means iterating on the bucket sort. On the bucket array, and you know, materializing the final sort. This is much faster for this specific use case than traditional sorting, and yeah, it's basically, it has some real world advantages, like, you know, no cache misses, the branch miss prediction, and allocation free in particular. You know, you can keep the bucket array fixed, and you only have to clear it out, so you're not really allocating it every time. There is another important concept, which is we are dividing our vectors into blocks. The way you assign a vector, a sparse vector, into a block will make a difference in the speed of your algorithm. And the reason is, if you try to maximize all the similar documents in a way into one block, you know that these similar documents are probably going to answer like a common query. And so clustering these documents will make a difference in terms of like how many live areas, how many live blocks you have in your collection. So that basically means clustering in this case, trying to maximize sparsity of the max of the vector of maxes, which in the end, in simple world, basically means cluster together documents that have common terms. That table, that plot shows essentially like what's the difference between random assignment of sparse vectors and curated assignment, which is a document reordering technique. So an approach where you try to reorder documents that are similar. That can be replaced, for example, with k-means or other similar approaches. So by doing that, you're trying to squeeze together the similar sparse vectors that will probably like end up in the same search result. So comparing to the baseline, we saw like that the early techniques, the early termination techniques that are definitely like popular these days and you know present in many search engines like MaxCore and BMW. Don't work extremely well with the learned sparse models, and what we noticed was a reduction in latency that was quite sensible. So I'll pass it to Ferdi for the rest of the talk.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm going to quickly just show a bit like how can you maybe use this yourself, and also come a bit to the why Rust is in this title of the talk as well. So yeah, how do you want to use this? BMP, it's on GitHub. I think, do we have a QR code for that for BMP? I think at the very end, it's linked for sure. You can find it. So there's a Rust and a Python interface here in this example is how you can use it in Python. Either you can use batch inference and you just give it an index and some queries, can get the top K and whatever, or you can create your searcher, give it an index, and then search through it query by query. Batch and single query interface. And how do you, or the question is now in this case, how do you get this index? How do you create the BMP index? And the answer to that is SIF. If you haven't heard of SIF before, SIF is the common index file format. Here, just like a quick example, kind of it just defines, it's trying to be an interface between different types of indexes, and it's trying to define a unified format where, okay, we have some postings and some postings list, and we just save everything and have some, a unified format for everything. And then, it was defined in this initiative, and there's a couple of different tools that you can convert between the different formats. So, for example, between the PISA research engine and SIF, you can convert back and forth, and there's also a converter from JSONL files of just dictionaries pretty much, and convert that to SIF. And then there's also one tool that you can go from SIF to BMP, and that's if you want to try it out yourself, probably the easiest way is to have a JSONL, convert that to SIF, convert that to a BMP index. This was from a paper, CIR 2020, from Jimmy Lin. Feel free to give it a read. And how does that work? There's a tool, SIF to BMP. You just give it the SIF index file, and then it outputs a BMP index. How might you, without having to create your own SIF index, use this? There's actually the SIF hub that hosts a couple of different indexes already. If you're doing research for something, there's, for example, the MS Markov passage index already there. You can just download it. A repository of different SIF indexes and queries for several popular sparse models and things like that. You can quickly download it and run it. And if you have some further reading, if you're interested, I'll leave this up here for a quick second if anyone wants to take a picture. Otherwise, we have 2 minutes, I guess, maybe. Perfect. Then maybe I'll just show a bit of a short like code demo that this actually works. Quick demo, I guess. So where I need to find the correct VS Code window, obviously. There it is. Let me zoom in a bit and close all these and go like this. Okay, so this is just a quick example script. Some curl commands to download the SIF index from the SIF hub. It's hosted on Hugging Face and it's open. Next command just converts the index to, calls the SIF to BMP, converts the index to a BMP index. And the last one is just an example script which uses the BMP cargo interface or BMP Rust interface to run the query. And in the end, we use Trek eval to, this runs the 2019 Trek deep learning queries. And I ran this a couple of minutes ago, and we can show this pretty much runs through, grabs the whole collection, converts it to BMP, and in the end we have 24 seconds on my small laptop running on its battery to churn through these 43 queries, and we actually get some results in the end. So yeah, works. You can use it at home, and if you're doing research or something, it's always a good baseline. Feel free to use it. Thank you. And if there's the network. Yeah, now it's gone. There was a.
In the end, the talk will be in pre-talk, so you can read it yourself. The video is going to be recorded and should be available by the end of next week. I'm going to take questions, and here we go. And repeat the question, please, for the video.
Could you just explain a little bit between how the deep intent and sparse models, how they are reweighting frequent terms, how that causes problems for the scoring functions? How does the scoring function change going from term frequencies to these like deep intent models, where you end up going to this the vector approach?
Okay, so to repeat the question. The question is, and talk back to me if I misinterpret it, but why here deep impact has such a different distribution of terms compared to the other sparse ones?
No, it was more these models change from like a frequency count of terms being used in the scoring to effectively their own custom weighting. How does that impact the scoring function such that it leads to this latency increase?
So the I think probably Antonio can hop in later as well, but the optimizations that are built, most of them use early exiting, and in this case, because or it's built especially on having a very big vocabulary, you have very very sparse vectors, and then you can estimate the max scores really well because pretty much everything is sparse, and then you have very good estimations for a particular document because a lot of it is sparse. In this case, especially for Unicoil and Splayed, you're losing a lot of the sparsity, because you have compared to about 3 million, now you have only 30,000 different dimensions, but still you have, in this case, 230 of these are non-zero. So especially you have higher max scores per document that you're estimating, and then it's very difficult to find good early exits, is how I would intuitively put it. Does that make sense?
So if I understand that right, it's particularly around like the block max scoring, which like you've seen would do at max one. And that throws that off, which then means you have to basically check everything.
You're almost going to a linear, you're probably not doing a linear scan, but you need to score a lot more. Yeah.
Tends to work quite well is that even if the words are heavily related according to your training set, and you reduce this all to basically the base synonyms in your index, which is basically what you're doing, you then lose the difference between different words that actually are different, even if they are used in a very similar sort of context by using your model that's related back to whatever you're trained on. So you're then going to actually have both, and then you can use both and then fuse them in your search, or how are you doing that? Just basically say, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I'll repeat the question. Tell me if I understood this correctly. You're basically asking what happens when you have terms that have similar spelling or...
Languages like that. That is a feature of language.
Yep.
People choose words to choose that word. They don't want to choose the synonyms or words that are in context typically used according to some training. That's just how language works.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you remove that and you use this sort of sparse vectorization, you reduce your vocabulary in some kind of way, which is what you did.
Oh, no, the lexicon is still present, right? So you still have the original term. The only thing is that you're not repeating it in the representation. You know, you just create one array once. Excuse me?
You were actually taking the representation, going back, searching for more, and doing the restoring and a resort according to the lexicon.
Oh, you don't need the lexicon anymore. You're basically converting like a term into an ID, right? I think we can, I'm happy to take it offline if you want to chat more about like how it works, the internals. Yeah, but we keep the terms. We don't lose, I mean, they're part of the algorithm. Okay.
No more questions?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.